Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 157. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brett Yanosky.
I'm Devin DeRee. It's just the two of us.
It's just the two of us.
It's weird. It's
just
weird sitting
the two of us.
No, I don't like this.
Can make it if we try.
Every bit
just
of this is awful.
Just the two of us.
No.
You and I.
I quit. today on The Inner Gamer, we got some great stuff. Brett and I play a game called Celeste. You play a game called Brawlout. They're great games.
Yes.
A lot of fun.
Super good.
We'll tell you about them here momentarily. Also for our news segment for today, a lot of really interesting stuff out there. The Nintendo Switch has its special secret revealed. Is that it's already obsolete? Question mark?
Bum, 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 bum.
Bum, bum, bum. Anyway, Kingdom Hearts 3 trailer drops. We got some stuff from a fan creating a Super Smash Brothers tabletop game. It's pretty funny. And then some fun stuff for Destiny, as well as a guy who can't stop gaming. We'll move right on into our discussion topic for today, which is a lot of fun. We got this submitted by one of our Patreon subscribers. Thank you very much for that. Mark Jensen, who gave us basically the conversation of creativity versus cost in games. It's going to be all about what microtransactions have led to today, where we're at, where we can go forward in regards to what's creative and what's not, and how much does that cost for us to pay as gamers. And with that, let's dive into this, Brett.
Let's do it.
Let's do this.
Let's make it happen.
Podcast activate.
Welcome to the Inner Gamer.
It is February 13th, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. It is nearly Valentine's Day, and we love you guys for taking the time to listen to us every week.
Brett.
On Valentine's Day, if you're a loved one, or if you happen to see a close friend that likes video games, you should tell them about our podcast, because we would love you even more for that.
Aww.
It'd be so good. And happy Valentine's Day to everybody.
Aw, Brett.
I hope you enjoy. Happy Valentine's Day, Devin.
Brett.
I have a rose for you. That's
I
invisible.
Love hating on you.
that's so sweet. It's so nice. Anyway, so we're going to talk about a couple games that I thoroughly love, actually. Yeah. One of which is a game that took me by surprise. We didn't talk about it on the release date list, but Celeste.
I am actually playing it right now.
Yes.
So, I'm sorry. I have a bit of an addiction problem already.
I just exposed Devin to it.
Yep.
And he's going to lose the next 3 weeks of his life.
Yeah, it's going to be real bad.
It's going to be super bad. But Celeste is a game that kind of came out of nowhere. I didn't know it was in development. Didn't know anything about it. Don't know the developer team behind it. But it came out on Switch, PC, and then I think PlayStation, I believe, if I remember correctly. So not everything, but it came out on a lot of systems. And it's a small team. I think there's like five or six people on the team that built this game. Mm-hmm. But it is incredible.
Oh, yeah. This is a definitely, I mean, straight up, we can probably say ahead of time, this is a dig.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
For everyone interested.
It's definitely a dig. This game has you playing a character named Madeline, or you can name it.
You can rename
you want,
her, but I never rename her.
Yeah.
I know. I always keep the main character's name, like from whatever it is.
Yeah. I like keeping the
I mean, especially
integrity.
Like in the Final Fantasy games, you can name your character. Oh, I named him Dick Butt.
Yeah, you don't want to name that character.
I named my character Fart Face. No, I did not do that.
Yeah, no, I left her the same name too. But she's basically like, I don't know yet exactly why she's here, but she's at this mountain by herself.
Yep.
And she meets this little old lady.
It's very dangerous.
She's like, don't do this. But she does it anyway, and she starts climbing a mountain. So it's broken up into chapters, and it's an action. It's a 2D side-scrolling platformer, basically.
Yeah.
And it has very simple mechanics, but what I love is how deep these mechanics go.
Yeah.
Because all you do is you have a jump, you have a grip button that grabs onto a wall that allows you to climb up and down the wall, and then you have a dash. So the dash allows you to, like, you can jump, and then you can dash forward and get further distance down through whatever area you're playing in.
Right.
And in addition to that, the dash can only happen once.
Yep.
Until
it has a
you
recharge.
Hit a platformer.
Yeah, which you can tell, so. Which is such a unique mechanic that, like, now that I've been playing it, like the mechanic of how you can tell you need to recharge is your hair is blue.
Yeah, you turn
after
blue
you
from
dash,
red. Yeah.
Your little brown pixelated hair turns blue for a minute, and then
yeah.
you've got a
It's super cool. Very simple. Yeah. And then like I was amazed when I started it because I was like, oh yeah, I'm so good at this. I'm really getting into it. And then when I finished chapter one, it told me you've died 135 times. So they actually tell you your death count. So it's like a sense of like reward the lower you can get your death count. Yeah, well, I feel like
it's kind of a double-edged sword because in a way you're like, okay, I learned my lessons and I am learning from my mistakes and I'm growing as a gamer and learning right. the mechanics and overcoming the obstacles, and then the game kind of like flips you off. You're like, nah, you died a lot, bro.
You died a lot. Yeah, no, it was incredible. I've now died probably 170 times.
That is too many times, bro.
But it keeps it going, which is awesome.
I wonder how many times I'm going to die now that I'm started playing it.
Well, you'll have to tell me after chapter one. I'm curious to see.
Okay, all right.
Because it does keep track of that, I think. So you can look in there. And then they have these little strawberries that you can collect.
Yeah.
That I thought, you know, if I start collecting strawberries, it's going to do something good for me or whatever. But after the end of chapter one, they tell you the strawberries are... you don't have to get the strawberries. They're just there to brag to your friends.
Fun milestones.
I was like, yeah. So I love the way that they handle this game. Because I also, there's an assist mode in the game also, where if the game is too challenging, which it can get incredibly challenging, you can turn on assist mode, which kind of helps you through the process. So you can experience the story.
Yeah.
But it's not... overly done. You know, it's not like here's arrows that follow you through the way, because eventually you get to parts where you have multiple paths that you can go. It's not just like one linear pathway from like left to right. It's where do I go, and then you find something and then you have to go around and figure out how to then get to the next part.
Right.
So there is some complicated stuff to it, and they slowly trickle that stuff into the game.
Yeah, and you can see it like at the start of it, very simple, very traditional platformer style, and then with the using the mechanics and very unique level design, it becomes something of great challenge, and there's no one way to do a level. Right. I think is what I'm liking so far that I've seen is you can do these in so many different ways. You can tackle these obstacles by going, oh, I'm going to go underneath this and then dash upward and then climb this and then jump onto this platform. You can say, no, screw that. I'm going to jump all the way up, climb up over it, go over the top instead, and then slide down to get to the next area. But that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's great design.
Yeah, it's super good design. I mean, they made it extremely accessible, but the challenge is in the level design, essentially.
Right.
Because the mechanics are super simple to figure out, and I don't forget them at all, but maybe two or three commands that you got to remember. So crazy. Yeah. And it's a pretty game. I mean, it's pixel art and it's gorgeous. Like some of the shading and lighting and stuff that they have in here is really nice. Because it's on a mountain, like they have some, snow cap parts that are like ice.
Yep.
And you jump on the ice and the ice starts falling. So you don't realize that some of the platforms are, until you get to the platform, are going to disappear or fall apart or whatever. So you're like, oh shit. And then you die. And then you realize, okay, now I've learned this. So what's the next step in the game?
Yeah.
And it's quick though. That's what I also like about
it's
it.
It's very fast paced. Yeah.
You die a lot, but I just jump right back into it. They put you in a position where you're I don't have to go all the way back to the beginning or whatever.
It's you just, respawn at the beginning of the little area of the room that you're currently in. You don't have to go all the way back to like the first checkpoint or whatever. You go back to the room that you entered. That's your checkpoint.
So this game came out on the Switch, PC, PS4, and Xbox One. And the developer, Matt Thorson, came out and said that the Switch is by far outselling everything else.
I have absolutely no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, no part of me is like, I don't know about that. No, I 100%.
And I think, you know, I mean, I know it's definitely the portability of it, but I wonder if it's something to do with, like, take for example, I don't know how it is on Xbox necessarily, but on PlayStation, I rarely ever go look at the shop. Like to just browse. I don't know if you're the same way, but I don't feel like that to your attention.
No, I'm not one at the forefront where I'm like, you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the Xbox Live or the PS4. I'm going to go on the marketplace and just see what's out there. I don't do that.
Yeah.
I'm a very dedicated buyer. Like I know what's coming out and I'm going to go get that right away.
And with this one, I love that you open up before you get in, you have to press A three times to log into the Switch.
Yeah.
And on the sidebar, you have, here's the latest things that are happening.
Yeah.
So it told me, hey, Dragon Quest Builders is out.
Yep.
Hey, this game is on sale or whatever. So
current it's game on sale.
Entices me to push myself into the eShop. And then I look at the eShop. And literally, since this console came out, I have looked at every single game.
Yep.
And I now have a wish list of like 45 games.
That's
it's
fair.
Terrible.
It's kind of funny how the wish list is starting to mirror that of the Steam sale wish list.
It's getting
a little hairy. But when the other thing I'll kind of remark on that about, you know, why we think that this was going to outsell on the all the other consoles and the Switch is performing higher.
Yeah.
I think there's a nostalgia portion to this of being a handheld system that we have it in front of us at all times. And it kind of
like reminiscing of the days of the Game
Boy
reminisce and stuff like that.
It kind of recreates that memory of playing a pixel game on a small little handheld.
Yeah, I guess because you had your, like Super Nintendo or your NES or whatever you were playing on, but Game Boy, like my first memory of like a pixel art game was on the Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
And I played that, but not ever have I, done, I never played any of those games on the Xbox or PlayStation, even the first PlayStation. They were all 3D at that point. And then N64 was my first Nintendo console, and that was also 3D.
Yeah.
So I guess Game Boy Color or Game Boy in general for me was my first exposure to like the pixel art world.
Yeah.
And now this resurgence is coming back and I'm obsessed.
Yeah. It's
great. It's great.
I'm so happy to see all these little tiny indie titles coming to the Switch. They're perfect.
Yeah.
They're perfect for
it. They are. But so Celeste, very good game.
Oh,
$20 on the eShop.
Definitely a dig.
$20 everywhere. Definitely a dig. Go check it out on your platform of choice. It's highly, highly recommended. And some people are already calling it potentially the game of the year.
That's
just crazy.
So crazy.
Since we have Monster Hunter World also, which is an incredible game that we've talked about many, many times. But there's another game I want to chat about real quick.
Okay.
I haven't played a lot of it, but this is a Switch game called Brawlout. This is a, I don't know, it's a brawler. It's basically a Super Smash Brothers like game. They have a term for it. I can't remember the name of the term, but there's a term for those types of games. So we've talked on this podcast about Brawlhalla. If you've been to our live events, you've played Brawlhalla. We've had that there countless times. This is going to be added to that collection because this game is very cool. Brawlout is basically just what you'd expect. You're on a platform world. This one's very 3D, so you can see your 3D characters very clearly, very vibrant. The colors are very, very strong in the game, which I really like. You start out with like 8 characters, and I think there's up to like 15 or 16 that you can unlock over time.
Okay.
Two of the main characters that are in there, which I think is really cool, is the Hyper Light Drifter character.
Oh, nice.
And Guacamelee is in there as well. So you can play Juan or you can play the Drifter. And that's awesome. Like the Drifter is such a good character.
I would
in this
always
game.
Be the Drifter.
And
always.
Very simple stuff. You have your attack, you have your special, and then you have like dodge and you have like a special thing or whatever. And 4-player couch co-op. Super easy to jump into. Pick your character, pick your level, start brawling.
Sure.
And it's got the same mechanics of like the percentage rankings that like like go up the more damage you get, and then you get easier to like get knocked off the thing, and you have the double jump to get back in. So all that stuff's there, but it's different in that the move sets are a little different. Which I mean, there's a little, the combos are more visually interesting,
okay.
I guess.
All right.
There's some visual effects in there that are pretty cool to see. But it's just another brawler game, and it's really fun, and it looks good. And we had a blast with it. I think also $20.
Man.
Yeah. These games are just like $20 now. It's like the standard on Switch.
I love
it. I love
that. That's great. I can buy 3 at a time instead of one big
exactly.
one.
Exactly. Yeah. So I played that 5 or 6 rounds last night with some buddies, and we were obsessed and just having David Bond was there, and he was playing with us, so he was having a good show. So shout out to David also. Brawlout, Celeste, both on Switch, also available on other consoles with Celeste. And
$20, get them.
Digs.
Get it, digs.
So that's going to be it for the games we played. Stay tuned for our gaming news, where we have things to talk about in the news world.
Some interesting shit.
Yeah.
People some weird stuff too.
Are strange, but that's okay.
Weird.
They are so weird. Anyway, we'll be back.
We'll be back, guys.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is time for our video game news. In this segment, we share the best headlines from the week in the gaming industry. First up, we have an article straight out of Forbes.com where it's basically an opinion article, but I found this to be very fascinating because of the headline. And that headline reads as follows. The Nintendo Switch's secret is that it's already obsolete. So
I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's weird.
That's a bit cryptic.
It's a bit cryptic. So if you go through this article, they talk about how the Xbox One and the PS4, they come out, and the big thing about like the Xbox One X and the PlayStation 4 Pro is graphics. Like, this console is here to sell graphics. Right. It's got HDR. Yeah. It works in 4K.
Frames per second. Check this shit out. Yeah.
And then the Switch comes out, and they say, hey, we have this console, and it has 1080p graphics, but it doesn't have HDR or 4K or anything like that. It's a console, and you can take it with you. And so what their argument is that the brilliance of this console is that it can't go obsolete because it's already obsolete. It's already at the point where it's not caught up with these things.
It's not. Which going means, to catch up.
Yeah, which means that people aren't judging this console based on the graphics. Instead, they're just like, I want this. It's home console and supportable console, and I'm going to take it with me. So I find that to be really interesting because they have successfully brought out a system that you can play, you can buy, and everybody wants it, and everybody's pretty much a Switch owner and then another console owner if they have that. That's what is kind of becoming the norm a little bit, and I think that's awesome. So like, they've molded out their own market again and made it to where they don't have to make the best looking things, because at this point we don't really need to. I mean, they're gonna push for this to have like photorealistic graphics,
right?
But we don't really need that anymore.
We don't.
Like, what's,
we really don't. Yeah, like the going for the hyper realistic graphics, or going for the type of gameplay where you've got so many different kind of commands on your controller, you know, whatever. We're not after that anymore. We have grown past that. The video game world is now all about the experience of what it is that you take away from it. What's your experience with this? And some people do like, you know, amazing looking graphics, and they like the very complex controls, but the Switch isn't after that. The Switch is after the experiences of simple mechanics, simple controls, really high art styles that aren't necessarily hyper realistic. It's going for a different feel, and the fact that it doesn't have to have the stress of pandering to, oh man, I hope our frame rate doesn't drop at this level, or we have, you know, some major glitches in this one. No, they don't have to worry about that. It's simple.
It is simple. Yeah.
And those needs are simple.
The time can be spent more on building a good game versus let's see how we can improve this lighting to be even more realistic than it was last year when we made the same exact game. And instead, with Nintendo, let's focus on how can we innovate on these games that we have. And look at Breath of the Wild. That game was running on something that was not the best. It's by all standards, like a much lower quality console than everything else.
Right.
But that game is stunning to look at.
Absolutely.
Because of that art style that they put in there.
And yeah, it's not about how real Link looks. It's about how vibrant the color is that he's interacting with. It's about the story that he's telling.
Yeah.
And that's what's fucking great. God, I am so in love with the Switch. I'm a fanboy, and I'm
super fanboy.
I haven't been a fanboy of Nintendo's in forever.
I haven't either. I mean, this is the first console I've had of theirs since the 64. And now I'm like, I bought more games on this than I think I did the first one.
Every place we go, every PAX or South by South or either world, what's coming out on the Switch?
Yeah. Tell me, are you sure you're not coming on the Switch?
Yeah.
I think you should.
Yeah. Anyway. Are you releasing this on the Switch? Please say yes.
Speaking of a game that's not coming on the Switch, as far as I know, Kingdom Hearts 3 has brought out a new trailer. Yep. And we already know the Toy Story is coming to it, as they announced last year. This time they've announced that Monsters, Inc. is officially going to be in Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah.
So in this trailer, we get to see Mike Wazowski, yep, the little cute little girl that's like, Mike Wazowski.
Yep.
I can do that adorable really well, obviously. Yeah,
you did. It was I'm almost terrible like she was here.
I know.
It was actually
right?
awful, but go on.
Yeah. So she's in it. You got everybody in there. They showed some more Toy Story World stuff. And yep, one thing that I thought was cool about this is just they showed off some of the gameplay and the combos and stuff that you can do in this game. And then some boss battles. And man, the visuals in this game are stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
again, it's not a game that has the most incredible graphics of the world. It's not photorealistic,
yeah,
but it's just the color and the animation,
yeah,
and all that is just fantastic. And actually, I mean, from a Toy Story perspective and Pixar perspective, it basically looks just like the shows or the movies. Like, it looks wonderful. So in that case, it is photorealistic too,
in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I know we've made the joke before about this game never coming out, and people are, you know, basically sitting outside of the studio like crack addicts, just scratching their arm trying to find out when this game is going to come out. But I mean, this is truly something that is going to be a fantastic experience, and people are going to love what they experience with this game. The gameplay is tried and true. It's stuck with it. You and I talked about the UI and how it hasn't changed.
Right.
It's the same Kingdom Hearts that we've come to know and love since the first game released back on the PS2. So,
oh man, that first game.
Right?
I had a strategy guide for that game. Remember the strategy guides back in the day?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had that. I used that to get through some tough levels because it was a challenging game. That was probably one of the first challenging games I ever played.
This is one of the first. The first Kingdom Hearts was one of the first games that 100% stumped me.
Really?
I could not figure out where to go.
Yeah.
And from a level standpoint, I could not figure out what I was supposed to do.
Right.
I was stuck in Halloween Town forever. Oh man.
Yeah. There's some wonderful
memories.
Stuff. I struggled with the Alice in Wonderland land.
Oh yeah.
Because I couldn't figure out. I can't remember if I was going big or small or small to big, but I couldn't figure out how to do that.
Right.
So I was like stuck inside this room. I was like, how do I get through this door that I'm not the right size for? And I struggled with that for a little bit, but I finally figured it out and made it through. It was awesome. But that game was tough, but it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful experience. Can't wait. Kingdom Hearts 3 still sometime in 2018, but we don't know when. So this is interesting.
You say interesting. I say laughable.
Yeah. So there was a man. This is an article from Kotaku. A man in a province in China that was playing in a cafe, as many people do.
Yep.
And he lost feelings in his legs. Yeah. Had to be carried out following a marathon gaming session. So according to this guy, according to this place QQ, which is a publication out there, the man didn't take a break during a reported 20-hour gaming session. And then when he decided it was finally time to go to the restroom, he tries to get up and realizes that from the waist down, he can't move. He is completely sedentary. So they had to call the ambulance, and he was taken out because he couldn't move. And kids, that's what you get.
No. But here's the funny part.
Okay.
He's being carried out. He can be seen by paramedics being carried out of this shop. And he keeps saying he wants to finish his game.
Yes.
Dude.
That is funny.
Like, I've bragged before about some marathon sessions. Like, oh, man, how long did you... Oh, man, we played that game all night. When Gears 3 was released, we played it until the sun came up.
And I'm sure that wasn't 20 hours.
It was not.
Yeah.
It was not 20 hours.
During that period of time, too.
We did pee. We, in fact, ate.
That's good.
And sustained ourselves. Granted, it was on things like
Doritos.
It was, yeah, Doritos and Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
You know, basically just putting pure poison into my body.
Not entirely healthy, but it's better than not eating at all.
Better than nothing at all.
Yeah. So, that's funny. So, lesson learned. Make sure
we
you
wish him a speedy recovery, kind of. But yeah, then again, Darwin Award.
Just don't do it again. That's the advice I have.
So silly.
So anyway, there's a game, tabletop game out there called Libertalia, and it's a board game about dueling pirates. And there's this guy on Reddit, actually on Imgur or whatever that website is that I never go on, but everybody's obsessed with that site apparently.
Yeah, Imgur.
JoeWee13 made Super Smash Brothers tabletop based off of Libertalia. So he took the game pieces and the game board and everything and basically recreated it as a Super Smash Brothers game. And it's pretty incredible the amount of detail that went into building this. So players assemble a team of characters, Nintendo characters, and they go at it hurling items and dealing damage while trying to avoid having their own guys KO'd. And I mean, he even went as far as taking art from the game, you know, designing the overlays and the spaces where the cards go. He designed the cards. Granted, he used Comic Sans, which makes me sad. But
well, now we just have to just tell everybody to not to buy it.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's not for sale. I don't think he'd sell it.
Oh.
But because I guess the Nintendo licensing and all that good stuff. But it does look pretty cool because he's got all the different players and all the different worlds and stuff like that. And it's impressive. So if you guys want to see this, go Google Fan Creates Smash Brothers game, board game, and you'll find it. And it's very fascinating. So check that out. Impressive skills.
I'm sure there are some people who are asking like, why?
Yeah.
But who cares?
Yeah. Who cares? So next thing we have is Destiny 2. We haven't talked about this in a little bit. I've stopped playing the game. Do you still play it, Devin? Not so much. I mean, Monster Hunter's out now, and that's basically a better version of Destiny.
Kind? Like, what?
Yeah,
what?
In every way.
I don't know if you can put those together.
Oh, dude, I totally do. I mean, fight monsters, fight the Cabal. I'd much rather fight these massive monsters that want to tear my face off.
Okay.
They're awesome. They're awesome. Anyway, but they are similar though, in that the like the hub world and everything. Like that was right. My only real association with it. Otherwise, yes. It's basically complete. I mean,
they're very
Monster
different
Hunter
games.
Is like a boss battle game.
Yeah, they both
and
have
then
hub worlds,
Destiny 2 is different. But Destiny 2 is a game that's had a lot of ups and downs since it came out.
You know,
it started out really strong. People were like, this is
great.
Better. This is what I've wanted.
Had some issues lately with the whole, the XP games.
XP, things have gone wonky and stuff like that. But Activision came out and said that its fourth quarter in 2017 year-end financial results said that the Destiny 2 was their largest PC launch in Activision history based on units, and that the first expansion, Curse of Osiris, had a higher attach rate, the percentage of Destiny 2 owners who bought it, than the first expansion for the original Destiny, which I kind of agree with, because what was the first expansion of the original Destiny? Was it, I can't remember the name of it. Was it the Crota's End? No, that was the Raid, wasn't it? Wait, what was there was two of those mini expansions before the main one came out in Destiny 1.
There what? Oh God, you're really throwing it out there.
Yeah. do you not remember either? I can't remember. Was it Crota's End?
It was Crota's End, King's Fall. There was
King's Fall is Raid, right?
Yeah.
That was the name of the Raid.
Yeah, because it was essentially Crota, Oryx. And then,
we had Rise of Iron, we had The Taken King, and then what were the first two? DLC packs.
I don't know.
Ah, shit. Well, anyway, they were forgettable, obviously, because they weren't very good. But Curse of Osiris had a higher attach rate, so that was awesome. that's good for them to say. And I find this fascinating because Activision on PC has been doing Call of Duty since the beginning. And for me to see the fact that Destiny 2 has outsold in units Call of Duty,
that's insane.
It's pretty dang impressive.
That's pretty impressive.
And this being the first PC release for Destiny is also pretty fascinating to me. So Destiny 2 players PC players weren't necessarily turned off by the fact that this was a console game coming to their system. They still bought it in droves, clearly. So in addition to that, Destiny 2 says that they are working on a lot of fixes. They're listening to their audience, supposedly.
We are not going to be cheating you out of XP anymore. We're so sorry about that.
They've released a roadmap covering plans for the next several months of the game, which will hopefully improve the experience across the board. Two big steps are the release of the second expansion in May, following another major content drop slated for the end of the year.
Yep.
So
really interested to see what that Destiny. That one's gonna be about, because
hopefully a raid, probably.
I hope a raid, yes, but I just hope more into the story that actually means something. Not to take away from the Trials of Osiris, or just the Osiris DLC.
I feel like Osiris himself, like you played through it. He wasn't a big part of it.
Nothing happened. Yeah. Nothing happened. I can't express that enough. Nothing happened. Yes, you got to see Osiris, and you got to see what a badass he was, and you got to see like the trials and tribulations that he's facing about trying to stop the Vault of Glass and the inevitable end that the Vex is going to bring and all this other stuff, but nothing took place there that you had a contributing factor in. It was basically looking through a window. As neat as it was to see Osiris, I was just left wanting and disappointed.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah, it was.
I don't know. I mean, I've been thinking long and hard about this game. I really liked the game when I got it. I played a lot of it. I beat the game finally, all that stuff, but as of now, I think I've decided I'm going to throw in the towel on Destiny and not play it anymore, because it's just, there's so many other things out there that are building. I mean, like I said, Monster Hunter World, that game for me is a way better quality game overall, even though the graphics aren't as good. There's the world building may not be, I mean, it's different, obviously, but
just different
as a gameplay system. Like the gameplay is so exhilarating. And that's what I want to keep coming back for. Sure. I don't care about the loot grind necessarily. I mean, I want to get my new armor and stuff like that. But just the satisfaction of going through those same monsters over and over again, I feel like every encounter is different. And I love that. And it's something wonderful. And then we got all these other co-op games coming out this year. So there's just...
It's a lot of...
Sorry, Destiny. Sorry.
We'll see, man. I mean, if the content ends up being pretty substantial, then yeah, I'll dive back in.
Yeah, who knows? They might pull a Taken King on us, and I'll be like, oh, I gotta get that.
Oh, I gotta get it now.
But yeah, for now, I want to take a break.
See an enemy that I give a shit that I fight.
Yeah, exactly. So that is everything we have for news, actually.
Oh.
That's crazy. That was super quick. So if there's something that we missed, we want to hear from you guys. Email us at hello@theinnergamer.net and we can talk about it next week. I also want to say shout out to all the new listeners that we have. I know we got some numbers increasing. So if you guys are listening to this, you like the podcast, please do email us and let us know any feedback that you have to make this better.
Yeah.
Something that will provide more value to you guys as you're taking your drive to work, or, you know, going to pick up your date for Valentine's Day, or
whatever you're doing at work right now. Yeah. Whatever all we can do to help fill the day and talk about some stuff you want to hear.
Hell yeah. Yeah. There we go. So we're going to take a break, come back here with a discussion topic on some really exciting stuff that is submitted by one of our Patreon subscribers.
Oh,
so
man. Stay
tuned and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Today we have a discussion topic that I'm really excited about. We have our first discussion topic submitted from one of our Patreon subscribers, Mark Jensen. So, Mark, thank you very much for
your
contributions.
Thanks, Mac.
He's been a Patreon subscriber for over a year now, I believe. So he's been he's been helping us out quite a bit, which is awesome.
Appreciate it.
Good buddy of ours from way over in the land of Denmark, which is awesome. So that's great. You know, I love it.
That's awesome.
And this discussion topic we have today, I'm really excited about. Also, to everybody watching, if you ever want to have your discussion topic on the show, you can head over to theinnergamer.net, click the donate button, and if you contribute to our show, there is a tier that allows you to submit discussion topics. So it's pretty awesome. And this one's
good.
I'm pumped. So
this one's good.
I'm going to read off what Mark said about this topic, and then essentially what we're going to be doing is creativity versus cost in video games. So here's what he had to say, and then we'll start, going through
and
talking about it. He mentioned that he's personally concerned about the industry of half-baked games and how squeezing every last penny out of people compromises the gaming experiences. So for example, Rise of the Tomb Raider, he'd much rather have an extra chapter in the main story than all the card trading things that they put into the game. He also has a brother who said he spent a lot of money on skins for League of Legends. People do buy it. However, it can, you know, it's understandable from a business perspective, but this is the doing of corporate studios, not necessarily the development studios, who are the ones that are pouring their hearts into delivering a story and a great experience. Even those people must sit back and look at something beautiful that was, you know, could have been destroyed by executives that are basically trying to optimize their profits. So he was saying, let's have a discussion about where this line should be drawn. Is there a way to make it so monetization and experience don't have to be opposing forces? Because there are these half-baked or compromised games that have been around for at least a decade, and it only seems to get worse. So that is the premise of our discussion topic today. And let's jump right into it.
Yeah.
So the first thing I'd like to do is explore the differences between, like, let's look at some good examples of this, things that have been done well, and then also some bad examples.
Yeah.
Obviously, we should probably start with the bad examples. That way we can, like, lead up to a lighter tone of that. But we all know that, you know, games are a business. They have to make money. Collectibles, skins, and all that stuff allow games to create an ongoing stream of revenue that right. helps them make other games later on. Let's start with the bad examples. So let's think about some games that have put these systems in place. Like, you know, at one point, you buy a game, you get it, that's it. But games, as we've talked about in the past on a previous podcast, are becoming games as a service where they want to extend the lifespan of a particular game. A lot of games such as Shadow of War that came out, or let's talk about Battlefront. I'm going to start with that one. Battlefront 2.
We're just going to go straight for the juggler, aren't we?
Let's go to the juggler.
All right.
Battlefront 2 obviously had their loot box craze that was going on, and everybody was like, this is gambling or whatever. And we've talked about many times in the past about how much time that they spent on building this loot crate system, this loot box system, and how much of that time could have been spent developing that story more or developing better multiplayer, which multiplayer is good, but it is vastly hurt by the fact that there's so much that takes away from the overall experience of just jumping into a game. Like, I don't want to sit there and have to sift through a bunch of loot crates and stuff and collect, like, manage all these collectibles.
Nope.
I just want to go into a game, get progression points to unlock better stuff, but not have to gamble to decide, oh, am I going to get this thing that I need to make my gun better or whatever? So
yeah, prior to EA pulling the actual loot box,
the pay to win mechanic.
Someone actually calculated that if you were to want to unlock every single item in the game, like all, you know, all the cards, all the characters, all the perks, all the stuff,
right?
You could do one of two things. You could either pay $2,100, or you could play for 4,500 hours.
It's good money. $2,100. What could you buy with that? You could buy a brand new MacBook Pro. You could buy
a bitchin' computer.
Your year's worth of home insurance and have money left over to buy like 10 games.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could pay your taxes.
Pay your yearly taxes. Pay right into your taxes.
Some of that,
yeah.
Like, that can go into it. What else can $2,000 buy? $2,000 can buy a lot of things.
It can buy a number of things. And yet, if you
but
wanted
why
to,
not?
If you
spend
wanted
it
to
on
fully,
loot chests, you know?
So, and that this is where, you know, I know we're going for this one first. You know, a game like Battlefront 2, it was really aimed for the multiplayer aspect.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it had a campaign on it, but very ho-hum. This game was created, as were the first ones back on the PlayStation 2. These were created for multiplayer experiences.
Right.
These were made to be played with friends or just random people over the internet and have a great time.
Yeah.
You know, now, if you want to fully experience it, if you want to unlock everything, you have to sink so many hours into getting the full experience. You start to have to question what's your investment in this then?
Right.
How much are you willing to invest into this game time-wise to be able to get the full game? And not to say that you have to have everything in the game.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people out there who are completionists, and there are other people out there who say, okay, well, I want to have Darth Vader, Boba Fett, Luke Skywalker, and how much time is that going to take to get those guys?
And yeah, it's so I was having this conversation with somebody last night about, like, I jump into Tomb Raider was mentioned earlier, their card trading system and stuff like that. You know, last year Shadows of War came out and it had like a little bit of a loop chess system.
Sure.
Injustice had that as well last year. So there was some of that stuff that was in there. But I was thinking about when I play through a game, like when I played Battlefield, all the series of Battlefield, like when I play through that, what makes me so happy is that I play the game, I finish a game, I get rewarded with points that help level up my character. And then by leveling up, I unlock new things. So the time I'm investing into the game is I can anticipate what I am striving to achieve by playing this, rather than sitting there and figuring out, okay, I need X number of dollars or points to get this chest or get this thing and hope I get what I need. Instead, there is a clear direction of, if I put this much time into it and like get this many points, then I know I'm going to get that gun that I want to make myself better. Or, like, again, back to Monster Hunter, because I think that's such a fascinating example of progression.
Correct.
Is that in that game, I know that by playing more and progressing more, I'm not going to just get stuff and hope I get what I need. I know exactly what I want. I can add to my wish list. I need to get these pelts. I need to get these fangs. I need to get this. I know I need that. I know where I need to go to get that. And every time I do it, I'm not only rewarded with better gear, but I'm rewarded by the fact that I'm a better player now.
Yeah. Well, and that also lends to the fact that you're experiencing this. You're playing this as a player.
Yeah.
Your interaction with the game's core mechanics has now been fully immersed into what the game's intentions were for you as a player.
Yeah.
The game has wanted to let its players, you know, there's, I don't know how many different outfits there are in the game. Hundreds, maybe thousands.
Monster Hunter?
Yeah, Monster Hunter.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
And to get those, you know, you got to kill, you got to skin some lizards, you got to go to the forge, you got to hammer some stuff out, you got to do all this kind of stuff, right?
Right.
That's what the game intends for you to do. The game intends for you to go and grind this stuff out, but it's at its core mechanics, the game is super fun doing that.
Right.
It's fun to get together with your friends and go out and be like, look, man, I've got to kill, here's my list of monsters that we got to go get after. Let's head out there and do it. And that's fun. Yeah. It's not nearly as a grind as it is in, say, Destiny 1, when you had to grind up materials, or in this case, Battlefront, which is just play the game for hours.
I think that's the difference, too, is that, you know, in Battlefront or Battlefield or any of these games where there's like this progression system that's happening, as you progress, I don't feel like I'm getting better. I just feel like I'm putting in more time.
You're being rewarded for your tenure rather than your skill.
Yeah. Yeah. And like in this other one, like I look back at characters that I fought in the beginning of the game and I'm like, wow, I am so much better at getting this guy and taking him down or whatever. But in the other game, like there's always going to be a better player in Battlefront or in Battlefield or in Overwatch.
There's always somebody better than you.
But taking a good example, Overwatch has the exact same systems in place, the loot box system, the random chance, but for some reason they make it to where it's not obtrusive. Like I still get satisfaction from leveling up and getting a random loot chest to do it.
Yeah.
But it's because the gameplay is so interesting and wants me coming back.
The game is going to change 0% from me opening those loot boxes, whether they were there or not.
And it's not throwing it in your face either. I mean, when you level up, you're like, oh, hey, I got this loot box. But then there's a part where you're waiting in the lobby and, you know, what am I going to do? Okay, I'll go through my list of stuff that I have and see what else is out there that I want to get. But it's not thrown in your face where when you open up Battlefront or if you open up any of these games that have this, you're like, hey, here's this thing. You should go open this. Do this. Now you have all these cards you have to manage. And it's like managing inventory, which I've told countless number of times I hate managing inventory. That's not just you.
I myself hate managing inventory.
Yeah.
Like, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
To sit here and have to think like, oh my God, I got to go in here. Let me go through all these drop downs. Let me go through all this. Let me go through my talent tree.
Yeah.
What the fuck am I even looking at? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because some of them, it's overwhelming.
Exactly.
And especially in a game like Battlefront, where all of that inventory, all of those perks, all of those talents, all of that affects your gameplay. That affects the way you get to play the game and experience it.
Yeah.
And not in a good way.
Right.
It's not in a good way where you get to be like, oh, I'll just throw some stuff on there. And no, that's you're going to suck. You're going to get slaughtered out there in any match that you play.
Right.
It's just going to happen.
Yeah.
While as opposed to Monster Hunter, where yes, you need a motherfucking spreadsheet, Excel spreadsheet to keep up with some of this stuff in Monster Hunter.
You do, yeah.
But it's good, though.
Yeah.
Like, one, you're not playing against people. You're playing against monsters, so you're playing with people rather than against them. And then, two, I only have myself to blame if I did my loadout wrong or if I managed my inventory wrong. I don't have to blame some asshole across the...
I didn't get that random drop that...
Correct.
It's correct. It's because you aren't at the right skill level yet.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. Another bad example is something like mobile games is like wrought with this stuff. And it just
Candy Crush,
the hell out of me.
Angry Birds 2, any of those, the Clash of Clans, and any of that.
Even South Park Phone Destroyer, which I adore, has all that stuff built into it where it's like, hey, you haven't logged in a while. You have a free loot chest ready for you. And like those gimmicky mechanics are so surface level. And it's just like, let's just grab your attention, your attention span that's so short that like, hey, this is your instant gratification moment. You have it. Now let's jump in here and do this for a little bit. But you're not rewarded with anything tangible. It's just stuff. And I want to be rewarded with something tangible. I want to feel like the work that I put in is actually going to give me some value. So that leads me to the next part of this, which is the fact that these games are being developed by people that are putting in work on these games. And is their work being valued? With loot chests and all this stuff, not a whole lot. Because think about it, like you work so hard to get this like gun or whatever, and then all of a sudden you have it for like five, like Destiny, for example, I think is a great example of all those weapons and things that you get in the early game, you're switching those things out left and right. But think about the fact that that one gun, there was a guy or a girl that probably sat there for 3 or 4 hours creating that model. And building that whole entire weapon design and everything.
Yep.
For going it to through, last
yeah,
with a
going
player
through,
for
especially with
like
the Mastercrafted
half an hour, maybe.
System now.
Yeah. And all that time and money spent to develop that could have gone into, like Mark had said, an extra story mission. Or let's craft a new world. Or all these different things that we could be investing that time into to give more value to the player rather than these things that are short-lived.
Well, and it brings up an interesting point. I want everyone to think, like, I'm not just sitting here just looking at my phone, not paying attention to you, even though that's sometimes what I do. No, I wanted to look this up. And fuck you. I wanted to bring up this point. So I want you to take a guess at this.
Okay.
How much did you enjoy Witcher 3?
This is a bad question. Ask me. Okay. I didn't play it a lot. Because I knew how much time it would take.
Yeah.
And I didn't, at the time when it came out, have like that availability to dedicate the time I wanted to put into it.
Okay.
So I've only played a couple hours of it.
Okay. But what you played, did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was, the world was beautiful. The game was like
astounding.
Incredible. The combat system was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Almost a perfect game, right?
Right.
As would probably a majority of the community out there would probably say the same thing, that Witcher 3 is astounding. How many man hours went into creating Witcher 3?
I'm sure a lot.
Well, in the neighborhood of 1.5 million man hours.
Holy shit.
Averaging about 2,000 man hours per day with a 200 member team, sometimes working between 8 to 10 hours a day.
And that's crazy because if you look at that, so that game was like incredible. And then, how, I don't know, how many, how many years do you think they spent on that game?
Three years?
Okay.
Three.
So Destiny 1, they spent 5 years with a 500-man team. And look at what we got from that.
Correct.
Yeah.
You're talking at like now we're getting in a neighborhood of like this with, you know, with the whole value of what it is that you're getting for a game versus if it's a chunk of a game or just a little bit of a game. In 3 years, CD Projekt Red worked hard. They powered through and they produced a masterpiece of a game, truly a masterpiece. And I bet you every single one of those developers, I would argue that every single one of those developers on that team feels incredibly proud and valued right. of the work that they put out.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, there's just no question there.
Yeah.
I would say. Now, let's shift this over. Let's look at EA and DICE.
Yeah.
Probably what? Maybe double that? Maybe even triple?
Yeah.
And what it took to make some of the games that they've put out in the past?
Right.
How valued do you think those people feel?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, you know, like, from... So, this comes back to, like, what Mark had mentioned is that the thing that we're complaining about is the doing of the publisher, not the development team, right? Uh-huh. So it's the corporate heads that are yeah. like, we need to crank more money out of this game. Let's yeah. do this thing.
We want so top line revenue. We DICE, want to see green yeah. across here.
And DICE is a company. If you look at Battlefront 2, strip out all the shit in it, mm-hmm. it's a wonderful game. Like, they went above and beyond. This is way better than anything that the first game ever had. It's just fantastic. And they always continually output fantastic gameplay experiences. But then you have all this other stuff that was put on top of it. And yeah, I'm sure those people are like kind of frustrated because they know that they built a good game. I mean, I would love to just chat with somebody from the DICE development team to ask them, like, do you actually feel genuinely that this made your game better?
And you have to wonder, especially from their AMA fiasco that they had, that I mean, those are people who worked on the game.
Yeah.
Those are people who actually went in, day out. They went in, clocked in, and they worked on this game.
Right.
They got destroyed on that AMA. Yeah. Destroyed.
Yeah.
And on one hand, I don't exactly feel bad for them because you stepped into Reddit. Come on.
Yeah. Reddit's pretty hostile. Yeah.
Real bad.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be mad at the developers because they're, I mean, at the end of the day, they're doing what they're told.
Right.
But I mean, this is why we're also seeing a shift of like indie games being always so popular. We've seen this in the past decade because how many news stories did we cover in the last two years? How many news stories did you and I and the rest of this team cover that was about so-and-so left amazing big AAA company to start their own yeah. thing?
No, that's true. That was exactly what I was thinking because that's happened countless times. And I mean, that's why, what's his name? I can't remember the guy that did Tacoma and Gone Home. He left working on BioShock. Like, he was working for 2K, and not that that's a bad studio, because I mean, they're making great games.
Yeah, they're making great stuff.
But he wanted to do his own thing.
He wanted to do his own
and
thing.
Get his own deal started. And again, Hideo Kojima, who didn't do it by choice necessarily, but I mean, he's got his thing now, and I feel like he's way better off for it because
yeah.
now he can unleash the creativity that he has and yeah. build the team that he wanted to build.
Because at the end of the day, I mean, we as consumers, we as the gaming community we vote with our dollar. I mean, we want the quality for every buck that we're contributing to you.
Right.
You know, there's a trust there. There's that relationship between buyer and supplier. And we're seeing within this last probably 2 years, we're seeing a big abuse of that trust from, I would say developers and publishers alike. Because I want to be able to, like, you know, wag my finger at those developers, like, shame on you for not sticking up to them and being like,
shame on you.
Shame on you for not sticking up for what it is to make a great yeah. quality game, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine. I don't know how many people probably at DICE were just clicking away at keyboards. It's like, if one more motherfucker comes up to me and tells me that I need to add another set of
right.
of cards.
Yeah.
I'm going to lose my shit.
Yeah. And I really, I would love to look at numbers in one of these situations.
I'm glad you asked.
Oh, you have numbers.
I do have some numbers.
Okay.
So EA misses their target for Battlefront 2 sales.
Yeah. It was 9 million. Or they hit 9 million. It was supposed to be 10 million, I think.
It was supposed to be. They wanted, ideally, 10.5 million.
Yeah.
We got to 9. That's 1.5 million shy units that you got sold.
Right.
I mean, if you think about that from the standpoint of, let's transpose that onto any other kind of business. I mean, let's just say cars. Like, you know, Honda was looking to sell X amount of Civics in 2017, and they missed it by 1.5 million total cars.
Right.
Like, somebody's ass would be on a chopping block for that. There would be somebody from a store, there'd be somebody from, you know, a distributor who would have to answer for that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whether you could say it's the marketing team, whether you could say it's the dealerships not pushing enough units.
Right.
Whatever. This being the case with EA, like, they took this hit and learned nothing from it. No one had to answer for it.
Yeah.
No one. No one had to step forward and be like, you know what? This was a mistake. No one had to do that. And so because of it, they still sold a shitload of units. I mean, hell, I still have friends that I'm seeing on Facebook who are like, anybody have Battlefront 2? I just bought it.
I think I know who you're talking about, actually.
You know exactly who I'm talking about.
I mean, I'm going to play with them. I like the game. Like I said, it's a good game. It's just not...
What are we even doing here, Brent?
Anyway,
what are we even doing here?
Let's veer away from the EA bashing for a second. I want to talk about another good example. Because we talked about it's largely a multiplayer game. Battlefront was.
Yep.
Had short story, whatever. Didn't do as well as it could. So let's then talk about the best-selling game of all time, which is Grand Theft Auto 5. That game is the biggest money-making game, I think, probably ever in history. And let's talk about why it was successful. One, it had like a 25, 30-hour story, which brought everybody in, which was awesome. Really well done. Three different characters, very deep, very in-depth, huge, massive world, very developed world. All that stuff was there. And then they took that same world and then added an online component on top of it, dubbed it GTA Online. And that is still going strong to this day, like 5 years later, however long it's been since that game came out.
A 1,000 person team.
Holy fuck, are you serious?
1,000 people worked on Grand Theft Auto 5.
Holy shit. Yeah, so that, I mean, that's massive, obviously.
And correct.
I think they have microtransactions in there, too. Because, I mean, they have different stuff that they're, like, trickling in the game over time, like little mini additional packs and stuff like that. But it's content, you know? It's not, here, let's see how you can, like, change up your character's look. Here's, now you have this, like, this car mechanic thing that they added into it. Or they'll have all kinds of, they'll have like new little mini submission story stuff you can do. The bank heist was a big part of it that took forever to come out. But when that did come out, that was huge. So it was a lot of content additions, but it was content that kept you coming back to play that online component and spend more money in the game.
Yeah.
And more time. So, but that game is, I think, to me, a good example because it wasn't just online and let's tack on a story. Mm. I bought that for the story.
Yeah.
And a lot of people stuck with the online. I never played the online that much.
I played quite a bit of the online.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of that came into play, but at its core, they had everything right with the story too.
Yeah.
And
they gave the game the attention it needed to polish everything else around the multiplayer portion of it. They nailed everything from, you know, the golfing, the driving around, the car mechanics, customizing your house or your apartment or your loft, whatever the hell it is you got, your garage, your cars, everything. You got to get everything customized, everything polished, everything that the characters could interact with. Now let's put the multiplayer aspect on top of it and we can really show what it's like to interact with all these in a very unique way.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course they nailed it.
Yeah.
That was perfect.
I mean, it's kind of like, I think Fortnite is a good example as well, even though you know, that's it's questionable in terms of the fact that it can be. I mean, it's a game of service. I'm sure there's like microtransaction stuff in there. I don't know how much they hit you over the head with it, but they did something similar where they built this core game that had, they put so much time into the core game itself and built all these systems and stuff. But now, because they have that platform to build off of, then they can go off and do Battle Royale in 2 months. They can do this other type of game mode. They can add all these things into it that keep people coming back, that are different experiences in that world,
right,
that they built. And Red Dead Redemption 2 is going to be that exact same way. And so if we look at, I mean, Fortnite, and then we look at Grand Theft Auto, and we look at Red Dead Redemption. Last Red Dead Redemption came out in 2008, right? Like 10 years ago.
God.
So there's so much time. And that's what I think, coming back to EA, unfortunately, EA and some of these studios should take like lessons from, is that, and Activision should listen to this as well.
Yeah.
You don't have to release a game every year.
No.
On a franchise.
You really don't.
If you... I mean, these guys, The Witcher is a great example. Grand Theft Auto is great. Like those development teams.
Because now you're talking about putting that quality in the game. Take the time for it. We've said it on this podcast. I'll argue with anybody out there in friggin' internet world, and you can fight me in the comments. But anytime a developer says they're going to delay a game, fine.
Yeah.
Do that. Polish, 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 polish. Fix that game. Make it pretty. Make it nice. Make it perfect for what we as the gamers are going to be spending our money on to experience.
Now, I mean, on the other hand, it can be a big risk, because if you spend 10 years on a game and then you don't have a creative team that is able to make sure it's good, you know, that could suck.
Sorry.
Yeah, that could suck. And then you've spent all that time and wasted a bunch of money and it just flopped.
Sure.
But I think the more time you spend, the better it's going to be.
But and to that, like you see that when you see certain companies delay.
Yeah.
I mean, we can look at it. Rockstar.
Right.
Anytime they've delayed, it's been for the better.
Right.
Witcher 3, or not even Witcher, but CD Projekt Red. How is Cyberpunk ever going to come out? We don't know.
I can't wait for that game.
But
another good example, No Man's Sky. It got delayed many times. Look how great that game. Sorry, I didn't mean to like.
That is not the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah. 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 That was just an example of being too ambitious and not understanding.
Like, that was not Icarus flying too close to the sun. That was Icarus flying it into the sun.
They didn't have 2,000 or 1,000 people like Rockstar did or whatever.
No.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. But I think drawing the line is definitely, like, to avoid this from happening is, like, these skin packs and these unlockables and things like that aren't necessary to make a game good.
No.
What's necessary is allowing your creative team to be creative and giving them the ability to come up with something new. Take Assassin's Creed Origins, for example.
Yeah.
That game, they were pumping that game out every year, and it just started getting shitty. Just super shitty. Call of Duty was the same way.
Yeah.
And still can be that way. But then what they did is, instead of making this development team come out with a brand new game in 2 years, they gave them a 3-year cycle. Same with the game I just brought up that I just forgot all of a sudden, the Assassin's Creed. Duh. So that one they gave 3 years instead of the standard 1 or 2 year development cycle. It shows in the quality of those games. Yep. Assassin's Creed Origins is finally a good Assassin's Creed in a long line of shitty Assassin's Creeds. Because they gave it that extra time to allow this team to be creative and make mistakes.
And do you see what happened when they tried to put out a multiplayer Assassin's Creed that was supposed to be just like all strictly multiplayer and you could kill each other?
Yeah.
People fucking hated that game.
Yeah.
Hated it.
Yeah.
I don't like a lot of them, but that's just me.
Right. So anyway, that discussion went so many different directions I did not expect it to go.
Way to go, Mark. Good. You pissed us off. I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. Please don't cancel your Patreon subscription. Please.
But anyway, so I think the moral of the story here, time is good. Let people be creative.
Quality over cost.
Quality
Most
over cost.
Most certainly quality over cost.
Yeah. Make money is important, obviously, but
we're loyal
the
buyers.
The more time you put into it, people are going to see that extra time through the game's quality.
You don't see From Software doing this crap. I'm sorry.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Freaking From Software. Crazy. Need for Speed. I'm thinking of that. Again, an EA game. Like that game. could be so good. And then it shits the bed every time. Just shits the bed.
Just straight up.
Gosh.
Drunken Bender night out in Vegas, shit style the bed.
Yeah. Mm. But then you got games like Celeste, and you can go play that and just really have a ball with it.
I don't know what you're talking about. Not complaining right now.
I know, right? So anyway, that is our discussion, guys. So lots of stuff.
Man.
Yeah.
I know we covered a lot. Hopefully that answered your question, Mark.
Yeah, and if anybody watching or listening has any additional comments, please
let us know. Yeah, let us know your thoughts. Please let us know your thoughts down in the comments. We want to know what you, obviously this podcast is for you to listen to, for you to give back your thoughts on what you think about the issue. So what do you think? Quality over cost? Let us know.
Yeah. And again, thanks, Mark, for the discussion topic. Remember, if you want to hear your topic on the podcast, head over to theinnergamer.net and click donate, and you can have your discussion topic right here with the
Make It Rain
two
on
beautiful
us.
People like us. You remind me of Fate of the Furious with the cars falling out of the thing. Anyway, if you guys haven't seen Fate of the Furious, you should go check out that stupid
Don't
scene,
do that.
It's silly.
Don't watch that movie. It's fine if you skip it.
In addition, make sure you check out the video segment of this every Thursday at youtube.com/theinnergamer.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. So we're off to a wild start because the games just won't stop coming.
Yeah.
They just will not stop
coming.
There's
a lot getting
And this
dropped.
Is a stripped down list. This isn't just like, you know, all the games coming out. This is I've cut back on some of these.
We have had to dial it back because there's in fact too much.
Too many. So of this list, we have five games that I want to talk about. The first one on the list is The Secret of Mana remake coming to PC, PS4, and Vita on February 15th.
Oh, it's so
good. This is the memorable adventure of Randy Prim and Popoy. Reborn as Secret of Mana, originally released in 1993.
How old were you in 1993?
3 years old.
Are you serious?
I was 3 years old.
Fuck you.
Secret of Mana is by far the most popular title in the Mana series and has now undergone a much-awaited full 3D remake. I was looking at screenshots of this. Holy shit. I was like, damn.
This is one of my very first RPGs for me to ever play.
Yeah.
This is where like I got my bug bitten into playing like not just JRPGs, but just RPGs in general. I cannot wait to relive this.
I think I'm going to pick it up too. I'm just kind of excited to play it. I wish it was on the Switch.
And it looks so good.
It's on a Vita. I just don't have a Vita. It does look really good. In addition to that, we have on the Switch on February 16th, we have Bayonetta 1 and 2. Now, I thought this was a collection, as in they were coming out together.
Right.
But no, they're releasing as two separate games.
Yes.
Bayonetta is a butt-kicking, havoc-wreaking witch, and she'll shoot, whip, slice, and burn angels as she uncovers the truth about her own past. Her weapons and moves are all stylishly over the top, but she can also dodge attacks to slow down time, inflict torture attacks on her enemies, and much, much more. I played a brief demo of this game several years ago when Bayonetta 2 came out.
Right.
And I was like, holy shit, this is really cool.
It's intense.
But I never got it. So
it's God of War in heels.
that's a good thing.
Really, really big heels.
Very big.
No, I mean, she's really her own character, and good Lord, Bayonetta is a badass.
Very much so.
Like some of these bosses like she fights, it's just bonkers. Like it is, you're like, the scale of it is intense.
Yep. So there goes all my time again. Another game we got coming out on the 16th as well for all systems. This is the Electronic Arts published indie game called Fae. Fae is a new type of platform adventure where the story is up to you to discover without handholding, told wordlessly through the discoveries of you that you make during gameplay. You run, climb, and glide your way through a dark Nordic forest and explore its living, breathing ecosystem filled with secrets and mystical creatures. At the heart of the experience is a tactile analog song mechanic that allows you to communicate and speak to every living thing in the forest. The visuals in this game are incredible. I talk about that a lot with indie games, but like this reminds me of the quality of Ori and the Blind Forest, and
right.
It's kind of mysterious, dreamlike.
Yeah, very
look.
Yeah, very like high fantasy, very mystical. I don't want to say cutesy, but or cartoony really even, but just
just it's like a fairy tale.
Fairy tale.
I thought it was interesting because somebody asked in an interview, the creator of this game. He was like, "So did EA hinder you in any way during the development of this game?" And he said, "No, they did not impact the development of this at all. So they were apparently very helpful and, you know, hands off in the experience." So
yeah, because EA needs to back the fuck up,
get their shit together. A game that shouldn't be created is Metal Gear Survive, February 20th on PS4, Xbox One, and PC.
We can just skip this one. I mean, but if you just want to skip this one, everyone, that's fine. No one's going to judge you.
This is a spinoff of MGS5 that takes place in an alternate universe. You create your own character and learn to survive, scavenge resources, craft weapons, build a base camp, and explore the unknown while developing the survival skills necessary in this hostile environment that does not include Hideo Kojima at all. So, the end.
So the end. game and everything that it is.
It may be good. It may not, but no. I don't have high hopes because it's going to be $39.99 though. So that's nice. It's not full price. So
that's
a positive.
Yeah. Thanks for not jabbing me in the anus with your giant price for a shitty game.
Yeah. So maybe it's good though. Who knows? We'll see. Something I'm excited about.
Not holding my breath.
February 20th on PC exclusively, Age of Empires Definitive Edition.
Oh, man.
This is the RTS that launched a 20-year legacy, returns for Windows 10 with over 40 hours of updated campaign content, new narration and pacing, jump online with up to 8-player multiplayer battles, new competitive features and modes, and 4K HD visuals with overhauled animations. This is a game that, this is the first RTS I ever played aside from StarCraft.
I think this is probably like, this would fall under a category of like a mini of a first for people.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This game was so good. I got it from a friend of mine. He got it from his dad's work back in the day. And it was cool because he was like, "Hey, you want to play this game?" It was kind of like they had like a PC rental service at his work where they could just check out PC games on disc and stuff. And so he was like, "Here, you can try this out." So I booted it up and played it. And then I discovered cheat codes at one point in the game and realized that you could type in a code and you could spawn a bunch of blue Shelby Cobras that shot cannonball rocket things out of the car.
That's insane. What you just said is bonkers.
So there was parts where I got like carried away with it and I stopped. And I just would spawn like a like 40 of these Shelby because I got pissed off at one of the AIs. So I'd spawn like 40 Shelby Cobras and just run in there and just like blow up their shit. And
it was awesome.
It was amazing. So that's that. Anyway, so that's all the games we got coming out next week. There's a lot, but it's just never going to stop. So
it's not
as is life now. And that's also going to wrap up our show. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcast. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend. And if you live in Dallas-Fort Worth on February 21st, we are doing another event. Again, we are on a roll this year, guys.
We are on the roll
with events. February 21st in Fort Worth, Texas, bar 2909. You should come out, join us, have some drinks, play some Switch, play some games. They have Jenga there. They have Connect Four, $5 crown and down. So that's also a thing. And then food.
If you're into that.
If you're into that, yeah. Otherwise, they have everything else, too. So you'll be all good. And then we got Patreon.
And we got Patreon. It's a way for you, our listeners, to donate to the cause in order to bring you all the great content you want to see and hear. Even $1 a month will help us bring all this content coming to you every single week. Plus, if you do support us, we do have some great rewards waiting for you. You can get some early access to videos. You can come join us in our Discord channel, play some video games with us. You can even get maybe a chance to play video games or even maybe a session of D&D with us. Who knows? Got lots of prizes, lots of stuff coming your way. So please head over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. And with that, that's going to wrap up our show. Thank you all for listening. My name is Devin DeRee.
I'm Brett Yanosky.
You've been listening to The Inner Gamer. It's still weird with two people.
What?
It's still weird with just two people.
I mean, it would have been not weird had you not interrupted it.
Say it again. Say it again.
The Inner Gamer.
No, see, okay, that sounds
weird.
Really
that's
lame.
Weird. Yeah, it's
really lame.
Okay. That's pretty lame. Yeah. We'll be right back.
Yeah.